And now it is my great pleasure to welcome to the program a dear old friend and my very favourite gardener, the absolutely marvellous Peter Cundall. How are you, Peter?
Very well indeed, Philip. How are you?
Were you dancing around the studio down there in Launceston?
Yes, I was.
Getting your gear off and everything? Yes. Look, we're not going to have time to go through the whole life story, so what I want to do is draw some ideas out of you. Your experience of war made you into a pacifist. Is that true?
Well, no, I'm not a pacifist. I'm totally against war and the stupidity of war. But I can't help but feel if somebody attacked me, I wouldn't just remain a pacifist in there and turn the other cheek. So you'd probably headbutt them or something like that.
Well, I'm glad you've made that distinction, because when we talked in Tassie once, I didn't get the impression that you were a pacifist at all. I was puzzled by some notes I've got here. You hate war, but there are times when you'd energetically partake thereof.
Only in defence. I mean, I can't believe any reason why I or anybody should want to attack someone else.
Peter, I know you'd have a profound sense of social justice. Does it come from a tough childhood, or were you politicised later in life?
No, I was political from birth, virtually. And I had a very tough childhood, and I think I saw injustice and experienced it. And I remember thinking how totally unfair the whole system was, particularly when you're on the bottom end.
How tough was it for you as a child?
Very. When I was born, my parents didn't have a home. They used to move from kind of one kind of room to another. And I was born in one of them. My father never worked, never had a job from the moment I was born until eventually, I was born in 1927, until eventually he went into the army at the beginning of the Second World War. He never worked. It wasn't because he was idle. It was simply because there was no work. And so I was part of a family where we were the poorest family in the poorest street, in almost the poorest district.
But and it's true, isn't it, that two of your siblings died of hunger?
That's right. Remember, it was not hunger, it was a form of malnutrition. It wasn't just two of them. They were dying like flies in Manchester in those days, and they had all sorts of names for it. You know, bronchopneumonia was one.
These are euphemisms, though, weren't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
And basically, it was nothing more than appalling living conditions, and it wasn't so much starvation, but just terribly poor quality food.
Is that one of the reasons that you advocate grow your own and self-sufficiency?
I don't know. I've often thought of that. You see, I started to grow things, about 1934, 35, and I was only about 8 years old then. But there was a bit of a thing about trying to survive. I've got this feeling in me all the time, I suppose, that you've got to not only survive, you've got to learn to survive, and you've got to be able to teach others to survive as well.
Now, I know that you joined the British paratroopers. You ended up jumping into Yugoslavia. You spent 6 months in solitary confinement. Yet you come here and you join the Australian Army. Hadn't you had enough of it?
That's right. It was a terrible blunder. But don't forget, when I came out of the British Army, I went back to a dead-end job working as a bus conductor, even though I was doing a bit of gardening on the side. And it wasn't very easy. It couldn't exactly... I mean, I came back, I didn't want to go back to that, but they said, you have no choice. That's it. That was the rules in those days. You went back to the job that you had before you went into the army. And it was so boring. It was unreal. And one day when the driver of the tram I was on said, you know, I've been on this particular route for 44 years, I felt my heart sink down to my boots and I thought, not for me. And then somebody showed me an advert to join the Australian Army, and I thought, that's about the last thing I want to do, but at least I'll be getting away from the war zone. So I just inquired.
A very bad career move. You finish up in Korea and Malaysia.
I know. But the thing was, you see, when I went to join, they said, what did you do in the British Army? Well, I was a foot slogger. I was in the parachute regiment, an infantryman, highly skilled, if you want to know, you know, I knew the lot. But I said, no, I was a librarian, because I'd had quite a lot of experience, oddly enough, working in a library in a place called Kassassin in Egypt, and even, you know, helping around. And I thought, oh, it's a librarian. I wasn't. And they said, just what we want. We've got a place at Bondi. Have you ever heard of... I said, no, I've not. They said, oh, library there. And on the boat coming out, there was hundreds of these young blokes. And I said to one, what are you going? He's a photographer. And someone else was going as a surveyor. I said, were you these things? I said, of course not. When we got to Melbourne, they shoved the whole lot of us in the infantry. We went to Korea.
Were you always as energetic as you are now in your mid-70s? Were you born energetic?
I've no idea. I do feel
energetic.
I mean,
malnutrition obviously didn't sort of destroy this vitality and vibrance that characterised you.
Well, all I know is, I mean, whatever I'm involved in, I put my heart and soul into it. You know, there's no question about that. I mean, I'm quite passionate about all sorts of things. I mean, I'm just as passionate about social justice. You know, I get involved in all sorts of things about conservation. I'm deeply involved in all these things now, as well as being a gardener.
Well, of course you are, and you're great on organic gardening. You oppose GM food, do you not?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that is... A lot of people don't understand this business about genetically modified food. You know, the people are coming out and saying, what's wrong with it? And you get all these scientists from the CSIRO are saying it's great. I'm saying, where are they getting their finance from for their research? And what is the driving force for genetically modified food? The driving force is nothing more than sheer greed. Nothing more, nothing less.
Mm. And as you know, in your lifetime, so many wonderful seeds have been lost to farmers. They can't get the damn things anymore.
That's right. And they're even pinching them from underdeveloped countries and actually patenting them. You know, it's terrible. It's appalling. And now, and some of the other seeds that are coming out that are being supplied to farmers, these seeds and the seedlings are hooked on chemicals. So that means they'll only grow with chemical fertilisers. You know, they've got certain diseases. You know, you've got to buy. They're very expensive.
Mm. You are, of course, a sex symbol to millions of middle-class women, so I don't want to get you into trouble. But how left-wing did you get?
Oh, well, put it that way, you couldn't get more
left. No one's
left.
Listening. This is just between you and I, Peter, right?
Very left, indeed. I mean, all my life as a child, I mean, I never met anyone until I was about 18 who wasn't a socialist. I mean, that was the kind of background that I come from. You know, I mean, that was it. But I was always fascinated by the Communist Party. And I used to read what I could, but it was very difficult to find out much about what they... We knew how bad they were and how evil they were, but they never told us what they believed in.
Mm.
And then I found that my knowledge came from anti-communist literature. Why the communists are wrong.
Right. Yeah. Mm. And you're self-educated then, aren't you?
Absolutely. Largely. I left school at 12, and I suppose the only thing I'm proud of is that I've never read a book in my life that I didn't want to read.
Mm. Were you a stirrer in the army?
Yes, I was. But in the military forces, you become quite cunning at your methods of stirring. You don't... you never indicate in any way.
Were you the good soldier, Schweik, were you?
Exactly, right? Exactly that.
Well, you love Australia, don't you? You seem to be as passionate about Australia as anything.
Oh, indeed. I think it's... I'll never forget when I arrived here in 1950. Remember, I spent most of my life here. And despite the funny way I talk.
Have ever noticed that. Have you got a slight accent?
I've tried to talk posh like you, Philip, and I can't do it. but I've never seen skies so blue. You know, I couldn't get over coming to Melbourne in 1950. I'm walking down Swanston Street and thinking, this place, you know, and these marvellous smells. And even going dancing, there used to be a place just over the bridge on the road to St Kilda there that used to go dancing. There's a skating rink there too. Do you remember these joints?
Absolutely. Yeah, I used to fall over me bum in that ice rink.
That's right. And, I thought it was the most... And that was Melbourne. I mean, I love any part of Australia.
How did you get into this gardening lark?
Well, because I was always kind of hooked, I did it for most of my life. But when I was in the Communist Party, we must remember I joined the Communist Party in 1956, right? When it was definitely not a thing to do. But I did
that was
so
the
because
year I joined it too. How long did you last? I lasted. Did you? Oh,
yeah.
I was out in a couple of years.
Oh, no, I did so. But remember, I was like many other people. In fact, nearly everybody else I knew. I've never met such dedicated idealists.
Yes.
And what did they believe in? The things I still believe in: the abolition of poverty, equal opportunity for everybody, you know, a free education, a decent health services, you know, all these things, jobs for everybody who wants to work.
What was the Communist Party line on manure?
I've no idea.
What about blood and bone? What were they
That was never. Actually, it's funny. The Communist Party meetings, which I used to attend, they talked about things that I was interested in, but there was no revolutionary talk. You know, it wasn't really about when we're going to get our weapons and get to work.
It was about the local drains and things like that, wasn't it? It's true.
It was mainly trade union stuff and organising logs of claims and things like that. And it was really quite funny. I mean, at times, but after a while I did get up and said, look, there's something going wrong here. I mean, we're supposed to be the leaders of the working class, but they won't have a bar of us.
You noticed and, that, did you, Peter?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we were also speaking a strange and peculiar language. You know, we'd get up before a crowd of people and say to them, the reactionary imperialists and their lackeys are once again plunging the world into a nuclear war and the contradictions are getting sharper every day. And they looked at us blankly and thought, what the hell are these blokes going? And I said this at a meeting once. I remember speaking for about an hour and a half. And everyone was, when I finished, they were all trembling. And one fellow...
What, with rage
said,
or with rage
no,
or exhaustion?
No, because I was telling the truth and they knew it.
Right.
I said, well, I said, the working class, I said, they're walking past, they're going their own way. And the different ones got up and said, I think Peter's was quite sincere. And then the party secretary, who by this time was black in the face, suddenly got up and said, look, Peter is perfectly entitled to be critical, but you must remember, comrades, that there's an important difference between critical and attacking the party like he just did. And that's when I first saw the face of Joseph Stalin.
Well, of course, these days you're you don't go around trying to plant ideas in the working class. You go around teaching people how to plant.
And I also plant ideas into the working class. If I'm working amongst a group of industrial workers, I'm looking at their work. And why are you putting up with that safety problem over there? And why aren't you wearing a safety mask? Or why aren't you wearing kind of muffs over your ear? I ask them. No, I'm sorry, I'm still the same.
Does it surprise you that you've been so immensely successful on television? I mean, with your face, Peter, your voice, this is not a lay-down mazare. You know, you're a precursor to the fat ladies, aren't you?
I think I am. And yet, when I first came on to Gardening Australia, one of the top producers, or one of the top officials of the ABC, said, you realise, of course, that with your accent, it's rather unfortunate, and you could never, ever be the main presenter. You realise that? And I said, why not? And he said, well, it is rather working class, isn't it? And I said, what kind of a bloody accent do you expect? You know, I'm a gardener, mate. You know.
Yes, the golden age of the ABC wasn't quite as golden as people imagine, really. But people took to you, didn't they, instantly? They loved your energy, your passion, and the way you fill a screen. I mean, the way you leap about. No one else does that.
I think, well,
except
what
the
it
Muppets.
Is, what it is, look, come on, you've made films. I soon realised that when we were making stuff on gardening, every time I did a particular action, they then were running around doing kind of cutaways and inserts. I got sick of that. I found it much easier to bring the stuff up to my face so the camera didn't have to go down.
Mm.
And I was talking through it, so you see me talking through a handful of manure, you see, and it also worked.
Yeah, but the physicality is so remarkable. No one else has ever done it, and anything I've ever seen. Peter, why Tasmania, briefly? Why did you choose that part of Australia?
Because that's where I was posted when I left the Australian Army, and because I was a POM, I didn't have a home base, so that's where I finished. And I'm glad, because I love it here.
You've been listening to the voice of the working class. Here's a guy who fights the Terminator seeds, who's the enemy of Monsanto. He's out there teaching us to be creative with humus. This is a remarkable bloke. And he's, how old are you now? I've just tried to do the calculations.
I'll be 73 next. Look,
Father of the ABC, like Ian Sinclair was the father of Parliament.
Really.
You must be the oldest broadcaster alive.
No, I'm not. I had a long talk with David Attenborough, and he's a year older than me.
Is that right? Well, mate, you've lived well. You're the Peter Pan of the medium. And it's congratulations. It's the 10th anniversary special of Gardening Australia this very Friday, 6:30 p.m. on ABC television. And there you'll be, filling the screen, my favourite garden gnome, the eternal radical, Peter Cundall. Good on you, Pete.
Thanks a lot, Philip.